Well, welcome back to the XR Industry Leaders Podcast with Arbor XR. I'm your host, Brad Scoggin, CEO and co-founder, alongside Will Stackable, who's also a co-founder and our CMO. And today we get to sit down with Angelina Gu, who is an XR designer at Boston Children's Hospital's Immersive Design Systems. Angelina, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me here.
Well, maybe start with just sharing a little bit about what your role is at the Immersive Design Systems.
Absolutely. First of all, as an XR designer, I design, develop, and implement XR training solutions that are tailored specific to our clinical educators' educational goal. And we use XR technologies and various authorizing tools and platforms to rapidly produce these training solutions that are highly customized and make sure a smooth implementation into our training curriculum.
What were some of the challenges that initially caused the hospital to begin considering XR in general?
So our XR initiative is kind of integrated into Boston Children's Hospital Immersive Design Systems, which is essentially a design lab that focuses on three different areas: training and performance, human factors and systems design, and device design and solution. So ultimately, our goal is to empower our staff to perform at their best and to reduce mistakes and errors. And our XR initiative provides a different lens. And by leveraging the new technology in the XR space, we're able to kind of fill in the gap of some of the training that we're providing.
And so you're using it for training. And I mean, are there specifics there on like what was missing in traditional training that you're able to fill in with XR?
So we're kind of still in experimenting, and we're kind of growing and trying to find our specific use case for XR solutions. We already do have a lot of existing ones, and we do feel like it goes together with our other pillars like life sims, mannequin sims, device design, and I feel like we're not really in competition with those practices. And in fact, we're also looking for ways to be actively being part of that training that's already existing. And we're trying to apply some of these best practices from the Simulation Society and just kind of align us with their practices in simulation and training.
What kinds of skills are students learning and practicing in VR? And can you give us any specific examples of when they put on the headset, what types of experiences they're having?
Our clinical educators come from a very diverse background and clinical roles. And because of that, their training needs are really diverse. And we use multiple different modality to kind of fit their need. Apart from virtual reality, we also use augmented reality, mixed reality, and 360 screen-based training. In roughly dividing them into categories, we have knowledge-based learning that are essentially just kind of telling the trainees what are the informations that are existing in a room that they're supposed to be aware of. For instance, we have a 360 virtual operating room that we developed for the anesthesiology department that we want the trainees to be able to know what's inside an operating room, what's inside the medication drawer, what are the medications there before they actually go into the operating room. And that training was especially useful during COVID because you don't get to access operating room on a daily basis. And we also developed 360 code cards, essentially to kind of tell you what's inside a code card. And we also use that to train our staff that are stocking the code cards so that they have a visual guide on what goes inside of each drawer. And moving beyond that, we have skill-based learning, which occurs mostly in VR. We have a co-car nursing orientation for the cardiac ICU nurses. It is a skill-based learning that we're trying to teach the nurse, or we're trying to have the nurse practicing drawing up medication in a code situation. And on top of that, we throw in some realism in the environmental sound. We purposely made the audio as stressful as it would be in a hospital. You would hear all sorts of background noises, people yelling, and also you will have your charge nurse and your clinicians in the background just kind of nagging you, telling you the patient is really not doing well. Please have that medication as soon as possible. And we want to train the nurse to be able to function and draw up medication and not having errors during those actual real life situation. And a benefit of using the VR is that the nurses are able to practice in a very safe environment again and again until they are comfortable with that. And we actually have a feedback from one of the nurses that when they were in the actual code situation, they thought about the training that we gave to them, and it helped them to calm down and have that confidence that they're capable of doing this. And on top of that, we also have scenario-based learning, and which are also doing a lot in VR. We have a nursing VR nursing simulation that are multi-user for the medical surgical ICU. It is scenario-based learning, so we have a virtual patient that are in the room, and we develop three different scenarios for that same department. We have a sepsis scenario, a blood transfusion reaction scenario, and also an infant bronchitis scenario. All of these kind of prepare the nurse to effectively communicate with each other, identify what are the symptoms, do their procedure, and just kind of going through the whole process of having a patient, taking the vitals, identifying the symptoms of a septic shock, and then act quickly when that shock is happening and when the patient is really not doing good. And we throw in the multi-user piece so that the nurse can also train to communicate with each other. And also, I think this is kind of like the benefit of using VR is that when in real life, you can kind of see what each other are doing. And you're in like a very familiar environment, so they don't really communicate with each other. And we have a student that told us because in VR, they can't really tell what others are doing. And because it's an unfamiliar environment, they're kind of forced to talk to each other and just kind of have to practice how to communicate effectively and voicing out when there's a concern.
Yeah, that's a very interesting benefit. I hadn't thought about that. And just very cool use cases across the board. I'm curious, there's several use cases there. Where are you getting content? Are you making that in-house or you work with third parties?
Yeah, so we do work with, we have a variety of authorizing platforms that we're using. And we have platforms for augmented reality that's mostly for step-by-step instruction. And we have multi-user VR authorizing platform. Basically, those are no-code platforms that we can just make adjustment, and then we can quickly deploy and get the user data from it. And generally, they're very stable. So we kind of skip through the all the troubleshooting, all the long development time, and we're able to roll out a scenario very quickly. But these platforms do have different authorizing capability. So just to be really mindful of what your educational goals are. And because as engineer, we tend to kind of try to realize every possibility. And it's also important to just kind of align that expectation with clinical collaborators and not to like be really focusing on the objectives and not to try to do everything in one single platform.
Yeah, that's cool. That's we've seen a lot of companies utilizing authoring tools more and more. I'm curious. So my wife actually is a doctor. So she went through medical school. And so I got to go through that with her kind of as much as the person not going through medical school can. But I know it can be a very stressful, it is a very stressful time. How have you seen VR help maybe with stress and anxiety in students in the learning process?
We have with our cardiac ICU nursing orientation training, we also have meditation applications that we put together with our training, which has kind of helped the students to distract, to kind of calm themselves and meditate while they're kind of practicing our scenarios. And we kind of have both of these applications out for the students to be able to use it on their own time.
What challenges did you face when implementing XR, and how did you overcome them? Any lessons learned that you could pass along?
A big challenges that we're facing is that a lot of our trainees are really just first-time VR user or AR. They've not used the technology before, and some of them have this perceived difficulty when they're facing a new technology. And depending on how that person's previous experience with technology, a phrase that I hear a lot is that I'm not a tech-savvy person. So they kind of have that perceived difficulty to begin with. They don't think they're going to do good in a headset. They're afraid of it. And they might put a lot of focus on how I get this headset to work. Is it going to work on me? Am I going to break it? And they don't have kind of an expectation of how it's going to be looking like in a headset. And because of the nature of a VR headset, it's kind of, to be honest, it's kind of like isolating because you're kind of in a different, you're in a virtual space. You're physically present. You feel like you're physically present in a virtual space and you don't feel like there's people supporting you. And for us, we really try to kind of lower that perceived difficulty. We try to ease their way into the VR headset so they really get to experience our training solutions instead of focusing on the technical difficulty.
And how did you do that? Is there any tips you could share for how to do that?
Thank you for asking that question. So firstly, we do visualization. We maximize the visualization so that we kind of brief them what they're going to see when they put on the headset. Some easy way are to provide like learning tutorials. We play the tutorials before a session so that the students can kind of see what they're going to see inside a headset. So when they first put it on, they feel like, oh, I've seen this before. I know what's the next step. And using a video compared to like paper guides or lecture are much more helpful in our practice for kind of easing them out into the headsets. And we also are using the casting feature a lot. That's a feature with a lot of the commercial headsets so that we kind of cast what students see onto a big screen. And it helped us to kind of see what are the difficulties they're running into. And if it's a session that other students are also watching, it helps them to see what are the issues previous person are running into, how are they doing in the headset. And when they put it on after watching others, they're much more they're much better when they're trying to understand the controllers. And people are generally towards they want to practice immediately after they learn. So it also helps them to kind of get used to the controllers and how the different interface in a software works.
I think that's so important. And you know, that's something we've heard from a few successful programs, that having video to orient them to the new technology before they actually put on the headset is so important, and that there is that barrier that often people won't even try it, or they won't use it if they're not comfortable with it. Other than that, in terms of when you all were looking at a device management solution, what were some of the features that were important for you in order to be able to build a scalable program and do everything you needed to do?
Absolutely. So picking up on, also this is connected to your previous question, a lot of the commercial headsets that we're using have a really complicated user interface. You can't even find, me personally, I have issue finding our software. There's just a millions of steps you're going to click on. And also, a lot of these headsets do some sort of customization for the interface. So for us, it's became really diverse that we can't really foresee what they're going to see when they put on a headset. And we also, we don't want them to be fumbling inside the vast different sorts of game and software. We want them to find straight into our training solutions. And we don't want, we want to more standardize the user interface that they're seeing. So we kind of foresee what are the difficulties they might run into. And that would go very well with the training videos too. It, when you have a standardized user interface, all the students are going to see the same page when they are using the headsets.
So kiosk mode then, yeah, super important. That makes a lot of sense. When it comes to having devices out in the field, you said that your students are taking them home. Are you regularly having to update them with applications, or what is the, is that been a challenge, just being able to manage the actual content on the headsets?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big challenge because initially we weren't able to control the update time of the software. And a lot of time the software updates and the hardware updates, they conflict with each other. And we had a really big issue is that our after updates, just for some reason, the keyboard in our training application, it just wouldn't pop up. And we cannot identify where this issue came from. Because it could be from the hardware systems, and it also could be from the software system, and we can't control either of them. So instead, we generally, we need some sort of mobile device management to halt the update. So it's not auto updating. We can't control Meta auto updating, but at least if we can control the software update, then there's less risk of the students having issue when they're putting on a headset. Just to make sure when the students are having the headsets, it's not updating, because if it's updating, it could cause issue and they might not be able to log into the platform again. And that's the least we want to see. And when that happens, we have to manually reset it again, which is going to disrupt students learning it. And it's going to really affect our user experience. And again, they will kind of feel like, oh, this technology is going to break all the time. And did I break it? Was it because of me? And some of them wouldn't even tell us. They would try to troubleshoot by themselves. And obviously, it's not going to help if they try to do that. So we really just try to prevent stuff from happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we see a lot of companies, you know, scaling and the need for MDM, whether it's the firmware updates or it's pushing the content And definitely the kiosk mode. You talk about just apprehension to new technology. Kiosk mode really helps, I think, simplify someone's experience if it's a first time. But another question I had that we didn't hit on earlier, you know, kind of in the line of apprehension, there are, you know, some of the general public may be apprehensive to medical students doing training in VR in, you know, things that could be life-threatening. How does a, you know, a leading hospital like Boston Children's, how do they kind of respond to that?
I see. We're training this specific part of the skills that the students are needed. We're not representing the final result of the training itself. And in fact, we kind of incorporate ourselves as part of the training curriculum. That's why I say, like, we're not trying to replace medic and sim. We're not trying to replace life sim, because that's kind of more the advanced training that the students are going to have. And with VR, you're also not trying to be like as high fidel as possible. We have our specific training goals in mind. And also actually practicing some of these high risk scenario, high risk situation. Those are really hard to simulate when you're having a live sim, or in any like mannequin sim. But in VR, you can really just provide a safe space for the students to make mistakes, because you don't want to make mistakes in real life. You want to get that training as much as possible. And a lot of our training, we have a facilitator to be around, especially those like the sepsis scenario, the blood transfusion reaction scenarios that I was talking about. We have a facilitator, a nursing educator around, so she can quickly identify what are the steps that wasn't take. In the scenario, we have pre-briefing and debriefing. You know, with those VR sim or any sort of simulation, you're not going to be as high fidel as possible. That's just like not really something that we can do.
I think you hit on two really important things. I think one, we've seen this again and again, is that really when VR is at its best in a training or learning situation, it is augmenting traditional forms of training. And I think that's important. And then two, we say this all the time, you know, VR is so good for training in things that are dangerous or difficult to do in the real world. And I think, you know, some of the procedures you can do again and again in VR, and there's no consequence. So I think that's really two really great points. Maybe just a last question here as we wrap. You know, you're in kind of the health, you're in the healthcare space, you're doing XR. How do you see, what do you see VR, how do you see it evolving over the next 10 years in healthcare?
Definitely. I think going back to one of my previous point, I think our XR training will be more incorporated into the regular model and simulation, and simulation itself will be utilizing more of these best practice from these industries, because we are part of the simulations. Right now, a lot of our training are more kind of focusing on the XR perspective, but I think the training part, designing learning courses that fits to the adult learning theories, that fits to your learning science series, are also really important. Mm-hmm. And also, I think because of XR are capable of providing a lot of data-driven insights, I think these will be maximized in the future. And we're able to facilitate, develop more learner-centered training solutions. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to use these data to understand what are the competency of our trainers and trainees. And we're able to kind of give them training scenarios that fits to their knowledge gap. And we'll also be able to use these data to adapt and iterate our own training scenarios to make it be making more sense and being more impactful. On top of that, I think the XR technology will be more accessible in the future, because a lot of things that I see is that it's not made for first-time user, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of accessibility settings in the VR headset. At least I feel like it's not got enough attention to these, and I feel like in the future, it would definitely be more accessible and be more usable. And that goes the same with our training scenarios as well.
Yeah, I think it's good. And I think, I mean, you've already taken a lot of steps in your own training to make it more accessible, which I think is really cool. Well, Angelina, thank you so much. This has been really good. We appreciate you taking some time with us, and we look forward to chatting again soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, just another really good example of things that are difficult, dangerous in the real world that you can do in VR again and again in a very kind of high pressure environment.
It's true. Yeah. Mature program, a lot of different use cases. You can tell that she has so much experience with actual real world deployment of this kind of technology, which is fun. We're seeing that more and more. And one of the things that I took away from this was the importance of really thinking about not just the onboarding experience within VR, which we often think about, but how do you orient somebody to this new technology? They've got a headset sitting on a shelf. Like, how do you get them to actually put it on and feel comfortable with it? I think all of us that have VR headsets and have used them for years now don't even think about that. But for a lot of people, they're doing training in this. It may be the first time they've ever put on a headset. So I loved that her recommendation was to create video content, that they found that having printed material wasn't enough, and having something that was more visual, showing them, you know, how to use the headset, kind of those basic first steps that sometimes we miss. So maybe that's an obvious takeaway, but it's something that we've heard a couple times from successful programs, and I think it's worth mentioning and highlighting.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, as always, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Make sure you check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, and we will see you next time.